Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans.
$829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
Welcome back after a week off for the bye. We Want Winners is back. And, you know, Rod, we are a post-game show recap pod. And what I like to do is I kind of like to give it a little bit of a story. What's the summary? What's the takeaway of what we just watched? It doesn't mean this is the takeaway from the entire season. It doesn't mean this is a takeaway for the future, just this immediate game. Though I think with a game like this, you do kind of think about how good the team is overall. So rather than come up with a theme, I kind of wanted to ask you a question, which may lead to where we're going to go with this show, which is after a victory, one in which the Niners were on the road, had to come from behind and actually then win the game. Do you feel better or worse about their chances to be back in the mix as one of the top teams versus how you felt last week during the bye week?
Not really, honestly. And that's what I, when once the game was over, I kind of went over to Twitter, which usually is a bad idea. just to let you know, because I don't, and I'm, you know, I tend to be a pessimist on these type of things. As if we go back all the way to the beginning, you know, to the off season, where I thought that all of those signings were kind of meh and did not instill any confidence in me that we were going for, you know, trying to make it to NOLA. So I have to, but I can always be wrong. So I'm looking to see how optimistic other fans are. And that's always a mixed bag. You really can't crowdsource that kind of thing. Because I think when you look at this win, and then if you just extrapolate that over looking back or looking forward, the opponent matters. Mm-hmm. And I thought coming into this game that this was a perfect game for Christian to come back and for us to kind of make us kind of feel better about things. Cause I thought that after them coming off that Monday night game with all their injuries and whatnot, it just seemed like to me like a setup for us to go in there and smash them, dude.
Yeah.
That's what I was expecting. I was expecting us to go in there and just, you know, they're going into their bye. It just all set up to, they got this huge lead in their division. So they, you know, they really didn't need this game. Kind of like what I would put it, make it akin to is, as Warrior fans, and maybe you'll get this, you know, I know you will, but others, that road trip we just came off of, we had two really, this was supposed to be a litmus test for the team. And we came out with flying colors. We won the first two games.
Three games.
Well, it was Houston and then Boston, right?
Washington.
Oh, okay. For obvious reasons, I don't count them, but and then we just got mopped by. It was almost like a scheduled loss.
Yeah, yeah.
Against the Cavs. We just got
by the way, the road trip's not over. They have a game in 2 hours here against what people think is the best team in all of basketball in Oklahoma City. So,
oh, that's right. Because I'm looking ahead to tomorrow night.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. But it's going to be interesting to see. People who know more about basketball than I do seem to think that the Warriors is currently constructed match up pretty well versus Oklahoma City. So it'll be interesting. But my point was, this all set up for Tampa Bay to kind of just get waxed. And, you know, it did not work out that way. I mean, it could have very well been a very comfortable win if things that I'm sure we'll discuss as we go on had gone the way they should have gone. It could have easily been a 2-score win, but it didn't. So that's why I just, you know, and I sat here watching this game just like thinking, oh, here we go. This is Arizona and the Rams all over again. We are going to somehow figure out a way to lose this game. A game that we definitely should have won, and maybe my bet and other things had me wishing that it was a lopsided victory, but it should be a victory nonetheless. I think we all agree that we should beat this team, just like I think we all agree we should have beat the Rams and the Cardinals. But yet somehow we're in the last 6 minutes of the game. This is really a game, and we somehow figured out a way to lose it. And that, all of that in a big ball kind of encapsulate how I feel about this team. I don't really have any confidence in us at this point. And this is a win, and that's a good thing. But, you know, putting us in the class of, you know, what we're talking about here is the Chiefs and the Lions. I don't think that we're there yet. I'm not saying we can't get there, but right now, I don't think we are in the same class as those two teams.
Yeah, we're going to get to the things that we like here in a second. And I think my number one is kind of related to what you just said, which is we've lost games like this before where, I mean, if you want to look at the box score, like Jay-Z once said, men lie, women lie, numbers don't lie. The numbers lie in this game because the Niners outgained the Bucks 2-1. Brock Purdy threw over 300 yards, and Baker Mayfield was barely over 100 yards. The time, you know, the way that they kind of, you know, they go into the first half, at the end of the first half, they're only up 10-3. And you looked at it and you're like, man, we should have been up like 20-0. Like, that's what it felt like based on how the two teams matched up and competed. But the Niners let these teams hang in because they're so poor in the red zone. And this is what happens. Now, the positive, and this will be my first thing that I liked, is the fact that I felt exactly the same as you. This was the Rams and the Cardinals all over again, yet the result was different. So there was some moxie there at the end for them to get into field goal range, for JJ to, you know, JJ could have scooted out and they could have got another down to throw. Instead, he cuts back and stays in bounds, knowing probably that, you know, we're going to leave it in Moody's hands again. We need to give him the easiest shot at making this field goal. So he took the yards and then they spiked it with 3 seconds left. So this was going to be the game winner here or go to overtime. So I like the fact that they won this game. You crossed over to the Warriors side, the death lineup side. I'll cross over to the Giants side, the Thompson and Clark side. Mike Kruko, when the Giants win a game where it's like, oh my gosh, it's almost a comedy of errors in the end there, he'll always say, you know, kind of gleefully, ha 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 ha, that was a laugher. As if to say, like, of course we were going to win, even though at the end there it looked like we weren't. Like, that's kind of what this game was to me. It was a laugher in that it was a comedy. It was almost like I can't believe we're going to lose this game. And then you don't lose it, And you're just more thankful than you are happy that they won. So right. that's how I felt about this game as well. So that's my first thing that I liked is that they actually did win this game. You think that they're not going to put it in Moody's hands again, but you knew it was going to come down to his ability to make a kick. That's just the way that these games work. And none of us had confidence. He didn't have any confidence because he almost missed it as well. And Shanahan in the post-game press conference basically said you're only as good as your last kick, and that's the one that everyone's going to remember, and he made it. And George Kittle after the game with Aaron Andrews said, you know, he was being really positive with Moody.
Not everybody was.
Now Kittle is probably a little bit more of an optimist than we are. You know, he had his personality. Debo was probably leaning a little bit closer to how we felt, right?
Do your job.
Yeah. And look, this is the same. Look, we mentioned this the last time when Moody got hurt. Is Kyle compared kickers to contractors. And so if the head coach feels that way about the guy who they drafted very highly last year, the rest of the team, it kind of looks at it in that way too. So, but at the end of the day, they got the victory in a game where I think we all felt in our heart of hearts, they were going to find a way to lose. And I'm just thankful that they didn't.
Yeah. It is a relief, definitely, because I was disagree. I had a disagreement with somebody this morning about the fact of, you know, he was saying something like they have to run the table. You know, they can't afford another loss, which is ridiculous. You know, 10-7 is going to get you into the playoffs, which if, as we said, you know, at the beginning of the day, you go 5-3. You're in very good shape. So this, you know, it's hyperbolic to say that they can't lose again. But this is a game when you look how it stacks up. I am rather optimistic, you know, overall about, you know, our prospects, because I really only see three, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Cardinals. Maybe that last game of the season does end up being for the division. Somehow, I don't think it's going to work out that way. So as I sit here today, I look at the Packers, which they are kind of, because I just don't think Jordan Love is healthy, honestly. But you look at the Packers, you look at the Bills, and you look at the Lions. Those games, to me, are going to tell me where we are as a team going forward. When you talk about the question you asked to start this episode, where are we in terms of where we want to get to? I think those games are going to show us if we can compete at the highest level this season, or if we are just trying to get into the tournament and hoping we get hot, because that's one way to do it. I mean, you don't have to necessarily be the best team to get to the Super Bowl. We can just, we're mixing metaphors and mixing sports this episode. The Dodgers weren't necessarily the best team all season. And actually, I don't really even follow baseball, but I knew that their pitching was supposed to be their Achilles heel. But somehow, you know, they got to the playoffs, and the pitching, you could argue, got them, you know, won them the championship. Mm-hmm. The same thing could happen with us. We could scuffle along, go 5-3, and even lose those big games, ones I think are big games, and still get into the tournament, get hot, and be playing our best football at that part of the year and still end up in New Orleans. So, you know, while I'm my glass is half empty than half full right now, even then, I don't know. I know that there is a lot of growth to be had. We've got players who can come back that can help us improve, and we could just get better. And where we are now doesn't necessarily write the story for how this story of this season is going to end. So that's kind of where, if you want to talk about the optimistic side of Rod, is that's where that is at, is that we can still continue to get better, and we could still, at the end of the season, you know, end up where we want to be, even though there have been points along the way where it didn't look, like that was going to be the case.
All right. What is something that was on your list as something you liked today?
Brock, I really liked, you know, I haven't been particularly impressed with his performance over the past, you know, two or three games, but he looked, you know, really good today. It was a very clean game. I mean, stats aside, that's something else that I'll get to that I liked. But if you look at our offense as a whole, and the numbers we put up were, no matter how you slice them, were very good.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he played well. I'm not trying to denigrate his play, but it was tough sledding running the ball. And Kyle was like, cool, okay. that's fine. We'll just chuck it. And they did that. And Brock was able to do that. And he, despite some leaky pass blocking, was able to chuck it and not turn it over. I don't even really, well, there were a couple passes that Brady pointed out were not very good throws that theoretically could have been, you know, he missed a couple where Brady pointed out he missed them inside instead of outside. And if the player had been playing the ball rather than the man, they could have been turnovers. But other than that, there weren't any real, turnover worthy.
The one mistake was the near fumble.
Well, that was
really the that only one. But
what you brought up with
Brady is very interesting, because I don't know how you feel listening to him. The last two times we've heard Brady, I have felt like he's almost not rooting for the comeback or for the other team, because I don't think he's thinking of it that way, but more along the lines of he's really hard on Brock versus not as hard on the other QB. And I wonder if some of it has something to do with the knowledge that we have that Brady wanted to be their quarterback before he retired. And instead, you know, and Kyle was up for the idea, as long as, you know, if Brock couldn't come back, if Brock was unable to return last season, Brady was on the table. But Brock was able to return. He was excellent last year. But I almost sense that Brady sort of is going, like, in his mind thinking like, oh man, if that was me, I would have made that throw or that read where Brock didn't. And it's an interesting thing to think about, because I was similar like you. I was on Twitter in some of the game, and some certainly, you know, when things go right or when things go wrong, I kind of want to see how people are reacting. And one of my buddies, he runs the website Warriors World, and Warriors World was pretty influential into the current blog sphere with Warriors content. Ethan Sherwood Strauss came from Warriors World. And so Sheed wrote something to the effect of, like, I'm not sure if Brady really likes Brock Purdy. And I replied back to him and said, I think Brady kind of wants to come out of retirement sometimes when he's watching these games. And so, you know, Brady is pretty hard on Brock, but at the same time, I think he sees things for Brock that Brock can also improve upon, because, and maybe it's a, maybe it points more to Kyle in his ability to scheme some of this stuff correctly. But it's just an opinion of mine. I do think Brady's a little harder on Brock, but it kind of fits us, because we're also very hard on Brock, because we've seen world-class quarterbacking is like. And for Brock to get to that level, he does have to clean some things up. Not that I am the, you know, the perfectionist on how to be a quarterback, but just what we've seen, what our eyes have seen. So I just thought that was an interesting thing to like how Brady calls these Brock games. Cause I imagine he saw himself as being able to possibly take them to the Super Bowl last year, but because Brock came back, he didn't.
That's an interesting viewpoint. I'm not by any means dismissing it. I just have never really thought of it through that lens. And next time I will definitely listen for that. But the one thing we talk about Brady overall, I don't really necessarily love his whole style. Really. It's just, it's fine. But I don't know why I kind of expect more when it's like the game of the week kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he's nearly as good as like Greg Olsen. Like Greg Olsen. But the one place that I do value his insight and some of the things that he has said that, you know, really kind of blow me away is when it comes to the quarterback.
Yep.
He obviously knows more about that than probably anybody and has a unique perspective. The perspective that he brings to it is really unique. And, you know, obviously like somebody like Tony Romo, who was a good quarterback and has some tremendous insights. You know, the insights that Brady brings to it are just, you know, different. And that's probably why he was, you know, as good as he was. There's just certain things that he says that, you know, I've been listening and watching in football in a cognizant fashion for, you know, 25 years now. And there have been two or three times where he has said things that I've never heard anybody else say as it relates to quarterback play and the way he sees the game and the way he thinks about it. So with that said, anytime he says anything about any quarterback, I perk up and I listen and not to say that he can't be wrong or just, you know, in a way that not even necessarily wrong, right. As if right or wrong, like it's a binary, but you have that with great players is sometimes they see things and expect things from players that they expect it from themselves that maybe isn't realistic for other people. Somebody that I remember way back was like Pete Rose, and you'd hear him talk about baseball, and he had an expectation of players and what was possible that, you know, just it. Magic Johnson is another one.
Johnson as a head coach. That's why he was so bad. He didn't have patience for guys not being able to play like him.
You didn't see that? I mean, well, no, I didn't. I did not see three moves ahead like apparently clearly do. Another one that, I mean, he doesn't do very much commentary, but I've heard him in candid, you know, where they talk to players during the game is Barry Bonds when it comes to hitting. He's just a savant. And it's, you know, to hold players to that standard is kind of ridiculous.
Well, so here's what after hearing Brady, I think this is the third game that we've had with him.
Yeah, I think so. You're right.
This was the best one that he has done. And I think some of it had to do with the idea of it being a close game because, like you just said, he knows this is a quarterback's league and he knows all of the tricks with the clock and with the late game quarterback play and time management and all that stuff. So that he excels when he talks about that in those moments. The stuff that he's not quite good at is, you know, when things are just kind of going and he doesn't have a lot of insight into, you know, he doesn't understand how to tell stories in the downtime of the game not being exciting. And that is he's a rookie announcer. So I would be shocked if he was good at that. Romo also not great at that. Romo is good in late game scenarios or when, you know, teams are having to make big plays and dial up like drama and stuff. Romo's excellent in it. But, you know, nobody is John Madden in that scenario right. where he's creating content or he's making up stuff or he's got this knowledge of stories from the 70s that relate to something going on. Like, that is what baseball radio guys are really good at, just weaving in and out old stories. So I liked Brady today the most out of having heard him, though Shelvin in the Discord made a point, and I was like thinking the exact same thing at the time that he said it, which is, because Brady is so comfortable in these moments of a close game where the quarterback play is so important, he almost overtalks because he's got to get out so many of these things and he doesn't really let the play happen. He's like speaking up right to the end. And there was one time in the game today where they were going to commercial, and usually when you go to commercial, you kind of create a little bit of a buffer to let the fans know, okay, we'll be back. But Brady didn't get the note or whatever because he was explaining something in extreme detail all the way till they went to commercial. And I'm like, dude, like, you just, like, no one's even going to remember what you just said because now there's going to be 3 minutes of, you know, going and getting a piece of some chips or something. So those are things that I kind of see just being someone who studies broadcasting and sports media and such. But I will say kudos to Brady. I thought he was really good today. And I hope he gets better because if he's going to be, you know, I think he's in the Super Bowl. If we have a close game, I think he's going to be good. If we kind of have a crappy game, he may not be as good, but not too many people are.
I'm sure he works at it. And, you know, he is better than the first time I saw him. And the only thing, if there was one criticism of him where I thought he'd be better is how, like, again, going back to Romo, how savant he was early on. And I think we don't see as much of that because people don't want to be compared to him, and that his ability to pre-snap, be able to tell us exactly what's going to happen, using his knowledge as a quarterback of what he's seeing, what the defense has given them, and the keys that he's reading, that this is what's going to be open. And that was, I know for me, and I know it was more than just me, because that was all the talk, was how great he was at, like, being a quarterback Kreskin, you know, being able to call what play was going to happen. And I know it was just simply him reading the defense and, you know, seeing what the quarterback was seeing. And, you know, couple that with the fact that he had just, when he came into the league, I mean, when he came into the booth, he had just left the league. So he was, like, really dialed into what offenses and defenses were doing. So, and I kind of expected more of that from Brady, but again, he's been great with his quarterback insights, and I would expect for him to continue to get better, because he's definitely not bad now. Like, that first game that I watched was like kind of painful,
where
there would just be long stretches of silence where it was clear that was the space that he was supposed to fill. But yeah, we didn't have any of that today. So yeah, hopefully, yeah, if he's got the Super Bowl, I hope that, you know, he can make it interesting for us. And I hope we're there.
Yeah. The other thing, can you imagine Brady just being a dude you could hang out with? That is part of the gig. And that does not come through in any way for him.
Nope. He's Tom almost, Brady.
Yeah. He's too famous to do that. You know, even though I always like to kid people that I'm pretty sure I played against him in baseball when we were in high school. Oh,
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work. all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. And they can help you get your confidence back, too, with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride, prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
So I guess we kind of buried the lead a little bit here with the start of this conversation. The other positive for me, I thought Brock is going to have a couple of moments here and there where you're like, what the F are you doing? Like when he's running out of bounds instead of throwing the ball away and he steps out of bounds and then we get lucky with the late hit and that, you know, stuff like that, where you're just like, come on, dude, you're such a smart player. Why do you do reckless stuff like that? The fumble was another one. But then, you know, he throws that loopy pass to CMC where only guys who, you know, play together can have that kind of rhythm. He finds the time to hit Kittle in the back of the end zone when the offensive line maybe has its best pass protection of all game and he didn't trust it because he was about to run again. And he's like, oh, no, there's like no pass rush here. But
it was so clear to me that, you know, when you talk about the difference between CMC and when like JP is in there, who JP played great, you know, expectations aside, he was, you know, he was leading the league in rushing at one point for long stretches of time. So it wasn't like I'm just, you know, he was good, you know, with some kind of asterisk. No, he was just good. But Brock was never as comfortable as with throwing him the ball as he clearly is with Christian. Talk about a safety blanket. Yeah. Whenever there is it doesn't matter where he's at, Brock will find him and give him the ball in a way that he just was not going to pass it to JP or Garindo. It's just, and rightfully so. I mean, he is such a good receiver. Like one of those catches that he threw like on the sideline, it was a great throw, but it's the throw that I know 100% he would not have made.
They wouldn't even have JP run that route.
No, exactly.
It'd be like a decoy. It'd be like a decoy route. And the defense is going to be like, we know you're not getting the ball here. We're going to pay attention to somewhere else on the field.
Exactly. 100%. 100%. So yeah, that, you know, among all, you know, just the juice that Christian brings to the office and the, I'm not the first to say it, the gravity, you know, like kind of like Steph Curry that he brings to the offense. Cause like you say, when he goes out in motion, all the linebackers, their eyes have to, they have to account for that. They can't just ignore in a way that, like you just eloquently said, when JP does it,
yeah, you almost want him to be the guy who gets the ball in that scenario, right?
Whatever. The entire defense is not shifting. It's all of their eyes are not going out there to JP or Guerrero the way they have to with Christian, because, you know, he's gonna, you know, like you said, they're not throwing the ball to JP 30 yards downfield. They're just not doing it. So yeah, it's you know, I don't know if we'll get to it, but it's still kind of troubling, you know, the red zone issues.
Oh,
but
that is gotta be number one on our do not like list for today. So let's save that, because I just wanted to make one more thing about the CMC. He didn't even have a fantastic game, but you could just see the way that he affects the other team. Now, I would like to hear Shanahan talk about this a little bit, but it seemed to me that the game plan for Tampa was to stop the run, because the Niners came out, and I think they threw like 9 out of the first 10 plays were pass plays. And I was like, this is so weird. You get the best running back in football back, and we're just chucking it and chucking it and chucking it. And I have to think that it's because of the way that Tampa was defending them. I assume that they were just all out trying to stop the run. And so that played into Shanahan's calling of so many passes. Because you heard Brady saying over and over again, like, you need to run on first and second down. And I'm assuming Shanahan was like, well, why are we going to run into 8-man fronts? Like, that's just silly. So that, but just having CMC there, what it does is it sets up the play action a lot better than other guys. And you're just more comfortable with him in the backfield, even when it comes to blocking, right? There, you know, poor Guerrero comes in one play. I mean, he may have been on the field for maybe 5 plays all game, and one of them was he's supposed to run a route, but he sees the blitzer coming, and he tries to chip him inside to Trent, but Trent's dealing with the linebacker blitzing, and so then it's free reign to Purdy. But you're just more comfortable in those moments where you're like, okay, I think I'm just comfortable that Christian's going to do the right thing rather than these two young players who may not be doing the right thing. Was there anything else on your positive list?
Yeah, well, I got a couple, but the one I'll go with my second one, which was Pearsall.
Yeah.
And his I guess we call it, I mean, is it a breakout game? ?
I mean, he scored a touchdown, which if he doesn't score that touchdown, they may have been stifled until George's touchdown, because they were just going, you know, 5 yards here, 5 yards there, third down, and then punt. But he went 4 for 73, 46-yard touchdown. He made a clutch catch, a couple of clutch catches late when they needed, you know, when they needed the guy to kind of go sit in the slot on that one and just catch it and get down. And then the other one was near the sideline as they were making that last comeback drive. You know, the problem with Pearsall, this is not to compare him to JJ, because they're completely different players, but I think they're going to have some of the same issues. It's just their inability to break open in some cases because they don't have top level speed. He should, you watch him and you're like, he should be a little shiftier than he feels. He should be a little more scat backy than he feels. And he almost, even on that breakaway touchdown, I was watching, I was like, okay, he had to slow down to speed up at the end, 'cause he did not trust his speed to get to the pylon without a juke. And I was like, that's tough, you know, because he's the one who's at full speed running. I'll be interested in the ways that they utilize him, because the lack of speed is a little glaring to me. But then again, you have someone with world-class speed like Cowing, and he can't even get on the field. So there's also something to say about that.
Well, the thing that I think is going to be tough for him is that now with Ayuk going out, Jennings now having to be the X, he's going to kind of be Jennings, and just the things that Jennings gave us beyond being able to catch the ball, like in the passing game and in, you know, being third in Juwan. I don't think that those necessarily play to the kind of player that Pearsall will grow into. He's more of a slot receiver, I think. And it just, due to the circumstances, I don't know how much he's going to be able to play that this year, because everybody is kind of now moved up a spot, you know, because for example, JJ is replacing Ayuk, which, you know, so then, you know, it kind of changes Debo's role, and it's going to change whoever that third receiver is, which it appears at this point is going to be Pearsall. So he's going to be put in situations, you know, where he has to block, which I know from watching him at Florida is not necessarily a strength of his. He is very, he's very willing, but so it's not like he doesn't want to do it. He's, you know, he's just not very good at it, you know, and a lot of it has to do with his, he's just not big, you know, so there are DBs that, you know, at the college level even were able to kind of just like manhandle him. I remember, I don't remember if it was last year or the year before, but like Green for Florida State, he just, you know, who's with us now, he just, you know, there were several times where he just kind of disregarded my man and, you know, to do what he was there to do. But, you know, he's a physical player. You know, he, even at, in college, he had the physical stature of an NFL player. So I won't be surprised if he's out there like the bulldog in the fight, but that he just gets physically overwhelmed as a blocker. You know, but that's not, I don't think as he progresses in his career, that's not where he's going to make his money. He's going to make his money in a Danny Amendola, what's the other kid? Wes Welker.
Is he fast enough to be Wes Welker though, do you think, or shifty enough to be Wes Welker?
You're right. He was, you know, I'm falling into the category of putting him in that, you know, kind of the
white dude,
the white guy, white dude. But like Wes Welker was the dude. he was the man. Even in college and then on into the league, I think he bounced around for a little bit just because he was a white guy, and not, you know, we, you know, the league and us as fans sometimes pigeonhole dudes. But he just doesn't have that physical profile. He's not super fast or twitchy, and doesn't really have like the short area speed. I mean, he gets it done. And clearly today he showed an ability to get open, because that was a great route that he ran. But like you say, he really had to be kind of shifty to, because he's not going to just burn. He didn't burn that guy out to get to the end zone. He had to be kind of, like you say, he had to slow down and speed up. That's a great way to put it.
You know who his speed reminds me of a little bit? And like the physicalness and the body is different. The game is completely different. But Dwight Clark was very similar to me. Now, what Dwight was great at was he had a great relationship with Joe. So they were almost like knew where each other was going to do before they do it. Also, he had to be a great route runner because he didn't have the breakaway speed, but he also had to have great hands. And so if you can, you know, even if the physical, the attributes don't fit to what a number one or a number two receiver is today, you can still have value. And I think that's what they saw in him was, he's lacking this one thing, but our offense enables us to bring in players. And if they do what we say, they're going to find ways to get open. But if he can catch, if he can run good routes, and he can, you know, have that good rapport with Brock, he probably will be able to be successful in this offense. So I think this is like one of those things where you're like, okay, this is a system pick. And it's one of those things where Kyle, I've been listening to this book, this Mike Silver book about Kyle, and Kyle does not lack confidence, man, in his understanding of football, offensive football, defensive football, every part of the game, and his ability to scheme people open. And this has been a problem with him and his relationships, because you got a guy like Matt Ryan, and Kyle was saying,
"I love that those conversations."
Yeah, like Matt Ryan. Like Matt Ryan has been, and Kyle are kind of the same. And Kyle's like, "Do this," and Matt's like, "Nah, bro. Like, you just gotta trust me. Like, I'm not gonna just do that." And so,
player over plays.
Yeah, player over plays, and it's a fantastic understanding. Like, I feel like just by listening to this audiobook, I know more about Kyle than I've learned since he's been the coach of the 49ers. You know,
yeah.
And the thing, the chip on Kyle's shoulder, is the Nepo baby thing. Mm-hmm. He heard throughout his entire career that the only reason he was able to go up the ranks is because he's Mike Shanahan's baby boy. And some of that definitely helps. I'm not saying that it doesn't help, but he had to constantly prove his value. And he also had to take some risks because, the industry rule number 4,080, the NFL version, some organizations are a little shady, and he had to kind of be able to maneuver his way out of bad situations in order to get the places that he could succeed at. And that's how he kind of was able to get out of Cleveland after the Johnny Manziel thing. So this is not really about Kyle, but essentially I think Kyle has a lot of confidence in his ability to see somebody like Ricky and to go, okay, Ricky may not have this, but he has this. And in our offense, this works. So I'm hopeful. And hopefully, you know, by the end of the season, maybe they're comfortable putting Ricky out in some of the Ayuk spaces and putting JJ back, you know, in the slot and not starting the game, but in some scenarios, as Ricky builds up, and let's not forget, he's, you know, not that, you know, 3 months ago, he got shot. And just to see him on the field is amazing in of itself. But I'm hopeful that as he gets more comfortable, as Kyle gets more confidence in him, maybe they can do a little bit more with his position and JJ's position.
It would help. I mean, it would definitely help to have kind of, you know, even like you said, if you could just on third downs swap him and put JJ back into his Y role, you know, to have the threat of him as a blocker, and then you could still use him as the, you know, for third and Juwan type plays off of, you know, him, his threat as a blocker. Hopefully he is able to evolve into that, and it's not lost on me that this is like his third game as a professional. So, you know, and again, I said it earlier, I know this is what we're seeing now. You know, he's probably not even scratching the surface of what he will be moving forward. So I'm just glad to see him out there, one, and then two, being able to contribute. I mean, I think it's cool, him getting his first touchdown, and even though him getting all these targets is, you know, he might make my preseason bet a little closer than I want it to be. So, but yeah, that nonetheless, I'm happy for him.
All right, what else was on your list of things that you liked?
JJ and his, you know, he was awesome.
Dude, he's just so tough. He's so tough. 7 yeah. for 93, by the way, led the team in receptions.
Yeah, and he just catches the ball and is, you know, clearly, I don't know if it is just where he ends up running his routes and it just kind of syncs up with where Brock is comfortable throwing the ball, but he is definitely, he had 11 targets. So he is operating in a space where Brock is comfortable throwing the ball. And so is a safety valve in a different way than Christian is. So it was just, you know, it's great to see. And then one more thing for me, and then I'll let you, if you've got another one, then we can go to, I'm not co-producing the show, but the other thing was Shanahan. He gets a lot of shit, excuse my language, for his play calling. But clearly, I noticed what you noticed, is that he leaned heavily early on the pass to exploit what the defense was giving him. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't continue to run the ball into those heavy boxes. Even though he had Christian back, he saw what they were giving him and he took it. And I think, you know, he needs to be given credit for that. As does Brock, for being able to execute that and take advantage of those opportunities.
He put the game in Brock's hands. Like
he did.
And Brock ran, they only ran for 75 yards. They had a 3.4 yards per carry average. That game was, hey Brock, they're not gonna let us run. It's gonna be on your shoulders.
Yep. And he did not fumble it, pardon the pun. He did a great job.
All right. When we talk about the things that we didn't like necessarily, I said that the red zone stuff was gonna be first.
No.
Okay, let's be real about this. The thing is definitely Moody. Okay, here's a question, and I wonder now. I'm gonna guess with all the big kicks that this dude has missed in the past, it feels like he's been a punching bag for years and years and years. He's literally been on the team for 1.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
When he makes a kick and he misses a kick, and maybe this is what they teach, the same disinterested look on his face. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's a bad thing when he misses, because I just feel like it's almost like he doesn't care that he just missed, or that he smelled something rotten. That's kind of the face that he gives off. And then when he makes a kick, it's like the same thing. So maybe that's better for him, and that he doesn't let the emotions of the moment kind of get the best of him. But you know, I made a joke in the Discord. I was like, man, we need to get like Jodeci to cut like a baby I'm begging to Robbie Gould to get him back on the team, because you know, I will say the reason why Moody is not going to get cut is because he can kick the ball in the end zone, because the kickers that they brought in, they were 8 of 8 in those 3 games that Moody missed, but they couldn't kick the ball in the end zone, and that led to some of our special teams problems. But yeah, Moody was so bad. And you know, Kittle and Shanahan at the end said that, you know, last kick matters and good for him and all that stuff. But we saw Debo went to go say something to Moody, and it looked like Peppers stepped in, and that caused a little bit of a scuffle between Peppers and Debo. And Moody just kind of sat there walking the same with his head down. I don't think he got involved at all. He just kept walking. But you know, players, we heard it from Peyton Manning, one of the greatest winners of all time. He just, stupid kicker, right? Like that was his quote, was the stupid kicker. So I don't know. I don't think that there's a solvable thing here. I think we're just going to ride this Moody experience out through this year. I can't imagine Kyle spends another high draft pick on a kicker, but I do think that they're probably going to have to look for somebody. There's got to be more than just the same guys that we see circled through who are available. But I don't know. There's just you see some teams who've got the kicker thing figured out, and then teams like ours who don't seem to care, and we don't have the kicker thing figured out. So I don't even know what to think about that.
500, great in baseball. 3 for 6 as a kicker, not so much. Secondly, we've seen it. You and I have been here long enough to see it. Doug Bryant, not for long as a third round kicker. You can't do it. And now my bias, I can freely admit, is being out there last year in training camp and watching him. The dude just seemed so disinterested. He, you know, you see Mitch out there and he's, you know, grinding and working hard. Hell, you'd see Juice out there kicking field goals and kicking punts. And, you know, that dude is just amazing. He did everything. That was one of the most impressive things about training camp, is that dude was everywhere. Juice was everywhere. He was, you know, long snapping and catching punts and kicking punts and kicking field goals. But Moody just kind of, I forget who it was that was with us last year. I want to say it was like Blake Gonzalez or something like that. He was out there and he would be out there grinding and kicking. And Moody's leg was super impressive, but he just didn't seem to kind of, he'd like just kind of hang around and he'd kick one or two and then he just kind of hang out and watch Mitch. His just whole body language was just kind of off to me. But anyway,
and that's what I see during the games. I sort of see the same thing. But again, I don't know if that's how they want him to be or if they want him to be more fiery or if he's more fiery than the players make fun of him for being more fiery. I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing, like you say. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Is it because it's just, you know, he clearly is a weapon with the kickoff. There's no question about that. But we are in an era now where like 50 yarders are supposed to be, you know, automatic. You know, it just, if you watch the NFL, other than just the 49ers, if you just, you know, watch red zone or whatever, you know, they, you know, it's to the point now where 50 yarders are like nothing. It's like when they get out to like 58, 59 and 60 is like when there is like an excitement, you know, you're supposed to make 50 yarders at a really high clip because that's just where we're at. And for somebody who has a big leg, you know, it's disappointing, but again, it's not like it's unprecedented that it takes kickers a while to get it. You know, he would not be the first rookie kicker or second year, you know, young kicker to flame out somewhere, then go back to the lab and then sign somewhere else and then be there for 10 years. I mean, that would not be, you know, unprecedented. So obviously as a Niner fan, we'd hope for him to get it figured out here. And not take him a bunch of failure to figure it out. But yeah, it's concerning because we clearly 9 games into this season, it's not like we're going to be, those kicks aren't important. Now, it didn't end up hurting us today, but we could have lost because of those kicks. I mean, it's not,
should have lost if Tampa, you know, can do a little bit better of blocking for Mayfield late in that game.
Oh my God.
We could have lost that game easily.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Shout out to Baker Mayfield. I don't know if he's always been this good and just not gotten the opportunity or if he has kind of got his stuff together. But, you know, he didn't have great numbers. But
he doesn't have any receivers right now.
I was just going to say, they didn't do him any favors. My God, there were several throws that he made that were like right on the money that those dudes just flat out dropped. But like,
I mean, they were talking about it. Brady was talking about it. It was the tight end Cotton was essentially Cade. What is his name?
Cotton. That was Cade Otten.
That was like his top guy. That was the most trustworthy guy they had. The Cade had 5 for 35, and Rashad White had 6 for 39, and those were
guys. And Rashad White is a running back.
Yeah.
So his receivers are literally, a bunch of those dudes are just like rookies or off-the-street free agents. You know,
I think four receptions by wide receivers for Tampa. That was it.
No Evans, no Godwin, no McMillan is there, you know, with their high draft pick. I know he just came back this week, but I don't remember hearing his name much. So yeah, he was doing it with like nobody. So yeah, I like to see, you know, the comeback story. So it's good. Yeah. You know, he was like the butt of a lot of jokes, and rightfully so, because at a certain point he was kind of an ass. And maybe he still is an ass, but he's a lot more productive. He's been a lot more productive the past 2 years than, you know, he's clearly talented. You could see why he was drafted high and why he won the Heisman. He's a talented guy, and I like to see like him and Geno. I like to see it come together for those guys.
We've seen him the last 2 years, and in both games, watching Baker, I thought if we leave too much meat on the bone, he's going to come back and kick us in the butt for it. And thankfully, you know, last year's game, he kind of got close at the end too, if I remember correctly. Yeah. So,
That play versus Bosa was awesome. I don't know what the explanation for it is.
Did Bosa just not want to get a roughing or something? Because he had his arm out and he's just like pulling his arm. And I'm like, you know, you could like kind of sit back on it, but is he worried about pulling the shoulder out of the socket or something?
That was crazy. And then he had a couple more where he, you know, kept the play alive. You know, so it was just good, you know. I know this is a 49er podcast, not a Baker Mayfield podcast, but I was impressed with him. I've been impressed with him all season. I don't know if he still does, but I think last week he was still leading the league in touchdown passes. I'm sure this performance today may not have helped, but yeah, it was
for you fantasy football players. He's been a baller in fantasy football.
I'm telling you, because I'm sure you didn't draft him. I can't imagine you drafted him. So yeah, he has him and Darnold on that score have been a boom. But anyway,
all right. So we talk. You know, we can even funnel the special teams and the muffed punt and Luter getting pushed back into Cowing. That's related to this. Cowing did have a good return late to kind of make up for it a little bit. But the other thing we mentioned was just the red zone. And look, Christian, you know, he was supposed to help in this area. There was one set of downs where Christian actually got a first down. So they were first and goal. They took him out, and it was Garendo up the middle for 0 yards. And then it was the play that I'd mentioned, Garendo miss, you know, kind of going out for a pass, but trying to chip the safety or whomever was blitzing. And then Brock getting sacked, and then you bring Christian in, and then they threw a screen pass to Debo on third and goal, and then they kicked a field goal or whatever. So Christian should help in this scenario. But if it wasn't for that Kittle play in the back of the end zone, they'd have been 0-for in the red zone again today, which is not good, because they are, if you're missing the field goals, and so those touchdowns turn into field goals, those lack of red zone touchdowns are turning into 0 points. Like, this is a problem that they need to solve before I think people will treat them as a serious football team.
Yeah, you have to. There's another great point about that Brady made, is that part of the problem with our, you know, going, that kind of funnels into my thing that I don't like. I'm going to combine the two into one. The stalled running game, which we gave Kyle credit for passing to get out of that. But part of that is the fact that our run blocking was not up to par. And, you know, Brady did a good job of explaining that, you know, when they're bringing, you know, that extra man in there, it is the receiver's responsibility to get in there and, you know, get that, however you have to do it. You have to root that safety out of there. Mm-hmm. You have to make those blocks. And we just couldn't clear a space. We just couldn't. We couldn't get guys on the linebackers. We couldn't get our backs on the linebackers. Our offensive linemen weren't rooting out those guys up front. And then when you couple that with the fact that, you know, Brock, was it three sacks? And then, he was, just kind of constantly under pressure. It's just those are the things I didn't like, is that even when with Christian coming back, he's going to get his, he's going to make runs on his own, but those guys have to do a better job up front. And they've done it in spurts. There have been times when JP was back there that particularly, and I guess they really have, Banks has kind of been trick or treat, but we've always been able to count on Trent over there. It's those other guys, and Pooney, statistically looked very good, especially in the pass game, but our run numbers on that side are still not up to par. So, you can tell me he hasn't given up a sack, which, McKivitz, coming into the day had only given up one. So, sacks are not a metric, or not a complete metric of pass protection efficiency. Let's be real about that. But they just have to play better, is what I'm saying. And we struggled today doing that, and we were able to patch things up and patch it together. But again, I am just, from going back and watching all 22, it's just, I think Kyle often gets, the blame for things that when execution is the problem. I just think at the NFL level, very rarely is it, that the coordinator makes a great call, makes a call, everybody does their job, and it just doesn't work. It just often, most of the time.
Well, Twitter tells me that the problem with the special teams is Brian Schneider. That's what Twitter is telling me.
I remember when he came here with a sterling reputation. And I think that even that, Kyle has talked about that, is how the injuries affect the special teams, the injuries to the linebackers and the DBs. Those are the guys who are our special teams guys. And when you take away that depth and you're just putting, you kind of replace those guys with other guys, or you replace them with guys who just ordinarily would not be out there, those are the kind of problems you have. And those guys just have to be better, point blank. For us to be better, they have to be better. So even in that, again, I don't know a whole hell of a lot about special teams, but I know that just in football in general, players, kind of like Matt Ryan said, it's players over plays. The players have to go without, no matter what scheme Brian Schneider implements, the 11 guys on the field have to do their job. And if they don't do their job, it don't matter what scheme he throws out there. He doesn't have a scheme that's going to be successful when 8 of the 11 guys do their job. Everybody has to do their job. And I just think so many times there are glaring situations where the guys just don't do their job. And that can't be. Now, you can talk about the coach and, well, then you shouldn't have those guys out there. But with a 65 man roster, you're just going to have guys out there sometimes that probably shouldn't be out there. That's just the nature of it.
The other thing that's going to help this offensive line is, I don't know this, but I'm assuming Kyle did not want to run Christian 25 times today. Like, it just seems like that would be silly to do that. And when they get more comfortable that Christian is Christian, I think there will be a little bit more creativity in that space. But also, just the fact that Christian is back may cause some teams to step back a little bit and to not just try and take away the run, because Christian is able to make stuff where maybe the hole isn't there perfectly. Like you saw, especially early in the game, that burst that he has is just way different than how JP and Guerrero. And Guerrero's a fast dude, but you just saw Christian's ability to bounce so much better. And so that was a joy to see. And I think that's going to help those moments as well, is the offensive line in the run side, they will probably look better just because you have the best running back in the league running behind them.
Yeah, he definitely is one of those backs in the league that it doesn't have to be blocked perfectly for him to make the offensive line look really good.
All right, what else was on your list for things you didn't like?
I combined my two, so that's all I had, was the offensive line and the run game.
I had one more. Well, I had two more, but one of them is just kind of like it's something that I'm paying attention to. I when you're watching games on television, it's hard to really see what's going on in like the receiver battles. But outside of like one play, Debo was kind of a no-show, and I'm not exactly sure why. He did have a big play late, which was just a joy to see, because you just love seeing that guy with the football. They kind of bottled him up otherwise, unless, the game plan really was to use him more as a decoy. Kittle was able to shake loose a couple times, where I was like, man, if Kittle is able to shake loose, like, where's Debo? Because they kind of do the same things very well. But so Debo was one of them. That's a small one. I hope to see that more as just kind of an off game than as a real worry. Obviously, the dude had walking pneumonia like not that long ago, and so there may still be some health stuff there. The last one for me was the defensive line late in the game. The opportunity for Tampa Bay was being able to run the football. Baker had zero receivers, like we just talked about this. His two top targets were the tight end and the running back out of the backfield. Thus, the Niners just really needed to stop the run, and that's all they had to worry about. And as Tampa was coming back to take the lead, White got loose a couple times. And I think, is it Bucky? Bucky
Irving. He was good.
He was 13 for 73.
Yeah. I got him in fantasy. So yeah, I was kind of pleased with that.
That's a nice little 5.6 yards per carry. And I don't think it was that, the offensive line was blowing the Niners defensive line. I think they were just tired, which is kind of weird. Now, some of it may have been weather related, because they kept saying that it was really hot. Mm-hmm. Some of it had to have been Bosa related, because he did not look 100% at all. And I know he had a hit pointer during the week, and they were kind of talking about whether he was going to play or not. So related to the defensive line kind of getting tired late, and they were getting pushed around. Thankfully, they came up big when they needed to. But the other thing was Bosa. When I watch the other team with the ball, I specifically watch Bosa, because I like to see what's being done against him, how they are game planning against him. And he was a little spry in the beginning, but he slowed down a lot in the middle of the game. And what they were doing was, they had, especially when their tackle went out of the game and School had to substitute. So they had a tight end on his side, which was obviously the smartest thing to do. And so he gets rubbed by a tight end a little bit, and then he beats School. And then they had the guard. I couldn't tell which guard it was, but one of the guards would kind of help. And so Bosa think he's got free reign, and out of the corner of his eye comes the guard and just boom, just lays a hit on him. So he was really slow, and you would see it when White's run, his touchdown run, Bosa was like trailing that play, like not the same speed that we usually see him. And then the one where White had, I think it was a third down run, Bosa sniffed the play out. or maybe it was Irving. I think it was actually Irving. But Bosa sniffs the play out, and he's got a one-on-one, and the guy's right in front of him, and he didn't make the play. And I was like, wow, like that, you're not going to see that very often. Now, Brady calls out the Bosa sack before it happens, which was great to see. And he had the burst on that. So I'm just saying, oh, he probably saved it for that specific play. But the defensive line, just late in the game, they almost gave it up. And then, Bosa had to have been hurt. But I just needed to make that mention because he just looked like, 60% of what he normally looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I noted that. And then, it's like I remembered that, he was on the injury report. So, you don't know how much of it is health related. Or he works out down there in Florida. Not just that, but that's kind of like saying, oh, you live in the cold, so the cold doesn't affect you. That's not necessarily science, but it's kind of troubling that, we've still got guys that are hurt even coming off a bye. Again, it's Nick in the depth charts. So in the depth pieces. So he's got to be right for us to have any shot of competing late into the season. So hopefully, he's able to, get healed up and, be, close to 100% for the second half of the season.
All right. So with wins, we do credit pie rather than blame pie. But this was, I'm sure you had your blame pie ready.
Absolutely. But let's get there. It is. I skipped ahead to our player of the game. But credit pie, I gave 40% to Brock because he was just awesome. And 35% to the defense. They came up with stops when needed, especially down the stretch, because it was looking kind of rough there. And then, as we also talked about during the episode, Kyle and his adjustment of the game plan to lean more on the pass than the run when we were not getting it done there. So that's my blame pie.
All right. Now, who is your
credit pie? Excuse me.
Yeah, your credit pie. All right. Let me make sure I have the clip. All right. Hang on.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
All right. Who's your Coach Singh player of the game?
Brock Purdy for the first time.
His first one. Yeah.
Yeah. He made some huge plays, big plays. And then with just, the stats, jump off the page. 353, two tutties, passer rating of 119.3, for whatever that's worth. But he was clearly my player of the game. JJ was like a distant runner-up. And then just from a narrative standpoint, Pearsall, or however it's pronounced, would have been just from a narrative standpoint, I don't think his play necessarily warranted being player of the game, but it's a great story.
Just from a defensive standpoint, Fred had 9 tackles as per usual. There was a couple plays where he was a little bit behind late, and I was just assumed that dude was just tired as well. I had mentioned this. So Nick had 1 sack, 4 tackles, 1 tackle for loss, and then 1 QB hit. And I had made this mention in the Discord. Like, I wanted to get the milk carton for Leonard Floyd. I was like, where is this guy? God. I didn't even see this guy, but I guess he did have 1 pass defended and 1 tackle. Or no, is that what it was? Yeah, one pass defended. And then 1 solo tackle. So Leonard Floyd was actually on the field.
On the field. We need that. That needs probably needs to be a segment. Where's Leonard?
That is a good one. Cause you think about 56 and 56 is a pretty famous number. And you see that 56 on his back, and you expect great things from 56, but man, there's nothing happening. So it's kind of frustrating.
Well, I don't know. It stands to reason. I had people telling me all offseason about he's had like 3 or 4 10 sack seasons, and people who have watched the team, particularly Buffalo fans, told me his sacks are like hustle sacks, as if he just continues to work. And especially, you know, when the game is decided, he, you know, they're like kind of like garbage stats that, you know, he's older and he's just not as good. And, you know, I 9 games into his 49er career, you know, I have not seen anything that tells me that that's an inaccurate portrayal, because I just think, you know, you should be more productive when you've got Nick on the other side. You know, it's just because nobody is double teaming Leonard Floyd, so you should be able to cook. So it's a continuing level of frustration. Do you have the stats up?
Yep.
What did Davis do today? Was he a goose egg?
He had 1 solo tackle.
Okay. I mean, he was supposed to be the difference maker according to Facebook. You know, we got the steal of the century is what I was being told is, you know, per PFF, he needed more playing time because he was cooking in the last 3 games. So, you know, hopefully that'll come to pass once he gets comfortable in the defense. But yeah, they're still going to be Nick in the depth pieces until somebody steps up and proves me otherwise. So,
I mean, they're going to have to continue to take shots in the draft, which is what it's going to be, because, you know, we'll tackle this subject when we get there next year. But when they sign Brock to that contract, you know, it's going to be the Leonard Floyd shots, or draft picks, and they're going to have to figure out how to find somebody, because not that they're wasting Nick's, you know, prime or anything, but it would be nice to take advantage of it a little bit more than they've been able to these last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, and that was my overall argument about when people were talking about all of these, you know, aside from the ridiculous trades, like, we're not trading for Max Crosby or Myles Garrett. Fuck out of here. That's crazy.
But with that Brock contract, because they're gonna have to.
Yeah, but
a roster with draft picks.
But if exactly that was my point, is you can't, what you need is as many bites at that, because let's be real about it. The draft is much more luck than science. And what you need is just a bunch of bites at the apple. And I just didn't believe that for a replacement level player like Devin Godchild or who was the other one? Jadeveon Clowney, that it was worth trading bites at the apple for even a replacement level player on a cheap contract for 8 games. I personally don't think this team is good enough to do that. You know, the time, if you really felt a way about addressing the defensive line or the secondary or the offensive line, the time to do that was back in February and March, when you could have just done it with money and not with the future. So we didn't. And now you just kind of have to live with it, you know. So, yeah, Davis, okay, you tell me that they gave a 7th round pick 2 years from now, which that's a lottery ticket. So yeah, that's fine. But I would not have wanted to, you know, I wouldn't want to do the deal, for example, that Detroit did for Za'Darius Smith, where they gave up like a 5th and a 6th next year. We need those picks, really. Yeah. And then, like you say, on the back end of that, do we have the money to pay Za'Darius Smith for the next 2 years if you trade for that contract? I don't see it with all the guys that we already have under contract. Now, granted, I guess I think Kittle comes off, and then I think they can you know, they can walk away from Debo. I don't know that either of those things are on the table, but they do have, you know, I know they do have some flexibility contract wise, but I hope that we don't, but I'm a sentimental guy. I still feel a way about Clay as a Warrior fan. So I don't want to see Kittle playing in Tennessee. I don't want to see Debo somewhere else. So I'm hopefully again, we can make that work. But once Brock signs, like you say, it's going to be a new world order. And I don't know for how long you'll be able to continue to kick the can down the road. So we need to hit on some of these draft picks.
Now we'll talk about this at the end of this season, early next season. We know Parag. Jeez. Do you think they're going to try and nickel and dime Brock and, you know, play this thing into an uncomfortable position for fans and for Brock of, you know, this contract and everything? Like, we know what Dak got, and now Dak's not even playing. Dak's done for the season, but that's the ceiling, and that's the contract you got to beat now. Brock has been to a Super Bowl, two NFC championship games. Who you want, Brock versus Dak, whatever. Like, I this is not even the argument, but like what the resume says for Brock is that he should be equal or better than Dak, especially where the market goes. But the Niners aren't great at this stuff, especially from the PR standpoint. It feels like a nickel and dimey situation is about to come, but I'm not exactly sure if they'll mess with the quarterback situation like that.
I wouldn't have thought they would have done it with any of those other guys. But I just don't see how, from a PR standpoint, because it's going to be different. I hear the fans talking about, you know, maybe Brock's going to take less. Let me tell you, there's no way in hell he's taking less. Number one, he shouldn't. And number two, his agency is like brand new. They're like 18 months into the game, and this is going to be their first big contract. And they are not going to advise him to take less. And nor should they. I remember when Nick was saying he wasn't worried about being the highest paid defensive player. That's great, because that's not his job to worry about. Yeah, it's his agent's job to worry about getting him that contract. And he got him every penny. So I just don't see it happening. And like you talk about a PR nightmare, in the way that this fan base turns on the diva receiver or even Nick for wanting to get his money, I have a hard time seeing them, you know, turning on the golden boy I definitely see them being the greedy owners for not giving the golden boy, who's given them everything and played for, you know, peanuts for the first 3 years of his career. And now you're going to, you know, steal from him and his pretty young wife. And, you know, I just think it would be a huge mistake. Mm-hmm. I think they should sign him. I think they should sign him as soon as they can, which is after the regular season. I think they should sign him before the playoffs. They should give him his money because, you know, from a market standpoint, he's earned it. And just from a marketing standpoint, he is box office.
Yeah.
Brock Purdy is what could you add? You couldn't ask for more in terms of being able to make someone the face. You know, if you could get a face of the franchise from central casting, Brock is it. Mm-hmm. In today's climate, you got to sign that dude. Yep. You got to sign that dude.
I'm with you. All right. So we'll be back next week after the Niners Seahawks, which is the 1 o'clock game. So, you know, we'll probably be here a half an hour, 45 minutes after that game is over. And they have an interesting slate coming up. Do you know that they play, is it Green Bay after?
Mm-hmm.
It's Seattle, Green Bay, and then
the Bears.
No, before the Bears is Buffalo.
Oh yeah. That's the big
game. In the evening, in the cold. that doesn't sound like a nice place to go for a Sunday night game, that's for sure.
Oh, that's right. The Bears are here.
The Bears are here after that. So we get to see Caleb. Yeah. All right. So we will be back next week for Thompson to Clark, which we usually schedule for Mondays. Brad is on vacation. He'll be back tomorrow, but his Rammies play Monday night. So we're going to push Thompson to Clark to Tuesday, but there may even, if there's no real Giants news, we may just skip. But it's possible that there's going to be some Giants news because the way that the baseball calendar works, some stuff may be happening soon. So,
I forgot to mention, for those of you who are interested, I got an email yesterday saying that the Niners opened up some standing room only tickets for the Seahawks. And for only $150, you can go and stand up. So, I mean, I won't see you there, but if that's something you're interested in, have fun.
Yeah, and to speaking of kind of how that works and Brock's new contract, they're raising tickets again next year, people, because they got to pay Brock. All right. Well, Rod and I, we'll be back next week. So for Rod, I'm Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.